conversation with Sarah Halfway. Sarah Halfway, another Dead Set legend, is a former Socialist Alliance councillor for the city of Greater Geelong in the Windermere Ward. She's also a trade unionist, social worker, and now running as a candidate in the upcoming federal election. Welcome, Sarah.
Morning and happy International Women's Day for tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, and to yourself as well. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'd be really keen if you wanted to just reflect on your time on council. What do you feel were some of your proudest moments and biggest challenges?
So I think proudest moment was using my platform as a councillor, both inside the chamber and outside, to advocate for Palestine and show solidarity with Palestine, because no other councillor at the time was doing that. And we did try and replicate what Sue Bolton was doing down here and get some motions passed, but we were blocked by the CEO from even putting on the agenda, so couldn't even debate it in the chamber, which was pretty frustrating. Which probably leads to the second part of the question. Just dealing with that massive bureaucracy that is council, and I think people have the impression that as an elected councillor, you can do whatever you want, and you've got the most power in council, and that's definitely not the case.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And yeah, that just sounds, yeah, just highly undemocratic. I mean, you know, with the limitations already of having only representative democracy. But how do you feel your experience on council was shaped by your identity as a young woman and as a socialist?
I think, yeah, look, as much as possible to try and speak up and question where things weren't right, didn't make sense, didn't align with my values and politics as a socialist. You know, on reflection, I always think maybe I could have done more, spoken up more. But certainly I'm happy with the times I did challenge things. I was happy when it was only me voting against something, rather than just sort of succumbing to that pressure of the bureaucracy and falling in line, which I think is what they expected at times.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That would have just taken just a tremendous amount of courage, Sarah. And so, like, I'm just thinking of you back then, who, you know, bravely kind of standing against things that weren't right. And just, yeah, like, you know, we're with you all the way. It must have been so difficult. And just being younger as well, like, you know, I think, I'm not sure what the average age of people on council is, but it's, you know, it's hard for younger people to be on council. So yeah, well done. And can you tell us about what's inspiring you to run as a candidate in the federal election?
Yeah, I think pretty similar to the local level, just, you know, absolute frustration with those that claim to represent us at a federal level. I think even more so for the seat of Corio, because it's a safe Labor seat. And our lower house representative is Richard Marles, the Deputy Prime Minister, a Minister for War, which is how we like to refer to him down here. A lot of frustration with him, obviously, on the issue of Palestine, not doing enough to condemn the genocide there, but also, you know, actively promoting and funding the manufacture of weapons or weapons parts in the northern suburbs, and doing very little to actually advocate for a community where there is a very high need. But, you know, those issues aren't exclusive. I think we're all feeling those pressures, whether that's housing affordability, cost of living generally, if you're unemployed, trying to find work, you know, a whole range of issues. And he's just not doing anything. So, as I've been told, socialists lead from the front. And if you're not happy, like, don't sit at home and complain about it on social media. Put your hand up and give it a go. So, Yeah.
I think you sort of partially answered my next question, but just around some of the biggest challenges facing the working class people of Corio, which is a ward that you're running in. But, yeah, like Corio has a particular profile as well, doesn't it? I'm not sure if you would like to just kind of maybe educate our listeners who might not be aware of that, but just of how Corio might compare to other wards, other electorates.
Yeah, so the federal division of Corio covers a huge area. So that's in the northern end, that now goes all the way up to sort of Werribee, Wyndham. All the way, covers all of, you know, Little River, Lara, all of central Geelong down to Warm Ponds Creek. So it's massive. But within that, we've got the suburbs of Corio and Norlane. And I think last release of CIFA data, those two suburbs were in the top 10 of most disadvantaged postcodes in the state. On a whole range of fronts, so both economic disadvantage, social disadvantage, you know, poor access to healthcare. And I think, and there's a stigma that comes with that. So, you know, someone who's lived in Norlane and Corio for a long time, and a lot of people report this, you know, when you disclose your postcode or your suburb, you do feel immediately judged for that. If there's anything reported in the local paper about Norlane or Corio, you can just read all the comments that are piling on about, you know, how rubbish these suburbs are. But, you know, the reality is that the issues we're experiencing are unique. I think they're highly concentrated in some of the northern suburbs because historically there's been a high volume of public housing. But certainly working as a social worker and working in mental health, it's opened my eyes that there's pockets of disadvantage and poverty in every postcode in Geelong. And, you know, these conversations we're having nationally in terms of housing affordability, cost of living. So I don't think that that stigma that's attached to the north is fair.
No, we hear that. I'm just gonna actually let Mary ask the next question. Over to you, Mary.
Hi, Sarah. can you tell us some of the ways that you think that the ALP have supported or harmed women's rights recently, and what do you think would be socialist solutions to resolving issues like the gender pay gap and gender-based violence, and anything else that you'd like to add to those, to that question?
Yeah, look, I don't really think they've done anything of value, like real meaningful value to support women. I think beyond Albanese making a women's rally organiser cry last year. Good job, Albo. I think I saw recently that they've made some comments around increased funding to childcare or childcare subsidy, but again, it just feels like a drop in the ocean and a token gesture. You know, as socialists, we advocate that childcare should be free and easily accessible, so they're certainly not achieving that. And then in terms of harm or setbacks, look, there's a whole range of issues, but the thing that keeps coming up here is housing, because you know, just taking the family violence issue and the fact that there's always that victim blaming of, you know, why doesn't she just leave? Until we've got widespread, you know, fully funded public housing that women can go to, this violence is, you know, the cycle of violence is going to continue. And on that one issue alone, Labor governments at a state and federal level have done nothing for public housing. In fact, they're selling it off. At a federal level, we've got this $10 billion magical housing fund that's supposed to fix it, rather than just giving $10 billion directly to public housing. It's probably going into the pockets of developers.
Or politicians, like,
or politicians,
you know, who buy, what was it, $4 billion houses in New South Wales and have several other properties. And I heard recently that most of the politicians have several properties. So, yeah.
It's outrageous.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, just from my time on local council, I can tell you that there were only three of us, as far as I knew, who the only properties we notionally owned or had a mortgage on were the properties that we lived in. every other councillor had a portfolio of assets.
Wow.
And that's at a council level, so you can only imagine what it would be at a state and a federal level. Yeah.
That says so much, doesn't it, Sarah? Yeah. No wonder they can't relate to us. Put them on a worker's wage, hey?
Yes, they should absolutely be on maybe on the minimum wage. Yeah. That would keep them.
It's an experiment.
Just where all the power is concentrated.
Yeah.
So we know that you're also a staunch trade unionist. What are some of the ways that you think we can encourage women to be active in their unions, but also some of the challenges for women that are in unions?
Yeah, I mean, look, in terms of activity, I have seen some great programs over the years in different unions. I think the ASU was one of them, but a mentoring program, like a sister-to-sister program, where either female delegates or long-term female union members would mentor new, younger women members coming through. With the idea to encourage more women to take on the delegate role or a HSR role or nominate to be on the branch committee of management, like whatever it was, just to step up and play a more active role in the union. And I think at that time I was a student member and, you know, the union was very conscious that even though it was a majority female-dominated union, the organisers and the leadership structure of that union didn't reflect that. It was very sort of male dominated. Obviously, there's been progress there, there's been changeover of leadership. But I definitely think that mentoring is a great one, and then providing training, activist training and organising training for members and delegates as well. So they've actually got some confidence in the workplace about what their entitlements are, how you organise your colleagues. And how you push back. But I think some of the challenges is that generally women tend to be more part-time. So we're in the workplace less, and perhaps it's harder to coordinate with each other and get organised. And then, I mean, the hot topic at the moment has been work from home.
Yes.
And look, certainly I'm not a Peter Dutton. I'm not advocating that we scrap work from home. But I think, you know, there are challenges that come with that in terms of, you know, trying to collectively organise in a workplace when workers are sort of physically isolated and working from home than, say, all together in an office or on a ward or, you know, whatever your industry is. Yeah.
And I know that when unions fight for improvements in conditions or pay, that usually we recruit more people into the union. When people see that the union is actually fighting for them, that's a way to win more women into the union. Mm. And when they don't, when they negotiate EBAs that don't win improvements, not real improvements, then a lot of people actually leave.
Absolutely. People get disillusioned and, look, we've seen that with various large, you know, public sector-oriented unions in different industries over the years where they'll oversell a deal and it's not as hot as the union leadership would like to say it is. And, you know, I'll be honest, we feel that frustration as socialists at times too, but... You know, we can't sort of concede that space to, you know, Labor Party interference. I think it's really important as socialists and any sort of left activist to keep going because, you know, it's about the rank and file membership. And if we as activists just go, well, our union leaderships are all cooked, we're not going to engage and leave, well, it's only union members on the ground that are going to be disadvantaged by that at the end of the day. So it's important that we put our hands up for, you know, the health and safety rep or the delegate or whatever it is and keep trying to organise members on the ground.
Yeah, awesome, Sarah. And just one last thing that we wanted to touch on is that you've been really key in organising an upcoming event, She Matters, that I think is... organised with the Red Heart. And can you tell us about She Matters?
Yeah, look, just one part of a collective down here in Geelong.
Yep.
But Sherilee Moody from Red Heart or Australian Femicide Watch has put the call out for this National Day of Action on the 15th of March. I don't have the exact figures in front of me, but I think from 1st of July 2024 until now, so in a 14-month period, I think it was 113 women dead. And, you know, we've been getting the questions from local media this week of, you know, you had all these rallies last year, you know, wasn't that enough? Why are you rallying again? And I think probably to go back to that first question you asked is nothing's changed. And we've already had another 12 or so murders of women this year. And we know that asking nicely and lobbying politicians gets us nowhere. We've got to get organised. We've got to get out on the streets. And we'll have as many rallies as we need to have until there's real change. So it's an NDA. I think it's the same time around the country, but certainly if you're in Geelong, it's 10:30 on Saturday, the 15th of March at Market Square Mall. And we'd really love to have some good numbers there.
Yeah, awesome, Sarah. Thank you so much. And, yeah, we do really, really encourage everyone who's available to get, who might be in the Geelong area or even if they're somewhat nearby, to please head to She Matters Stop Killing Women rally on Saturday, the 15th of March at 10:30 a.m. Market Square, Geelong. Thank you so much, Sarah.
It's also
thanks,
Sarah. It's also here in Melbourne at 11:30 on that same Saturday.
Yeah.
At State Parliament.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Sarah. Have an amazing day.